SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are live on a College Football Friday right here on Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is the mastermind of the college football pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. And Joe, week number one of the college football season now officially underway. 11 FBS games on a Thursday night, kicking off not only week one, Joe, but a five-day straight span of having at least one college football day game on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. 85 games featuring at least one FBS program in total. Lisi, week one has arrived, and we are here for it on FFC.
Oh, there is nothing better. And we kick-started the college football week, right, with two great games last night between Utah and Nebraska and Minnesota. I mean, fantastic finishes right to the end. And at the end of the day, you look at these matchups this coming weekend, again, maybe not as marquee as we're used to seeing, but there are some games that definitely from the spread perspective should go right down to the wire into the fourth quarter, Ben.
Absolutely so. There's not those ranked versus ranked marquee primetime matchups, Lisi, that we have each and every year. There is one on Sunday that we'll talk about later on here on this show. Number 5, LSU, taking on number 8, Florida State. But there are still some really good games, a part of the full Saturday slate, and 6 FBS games on this Friday night as well. Lisi, let's go back to yesterday to start things off. Utah and Florida, a ranked team in action, the 14th ranked Utes at home in Salt Lake in Rice Eccles, where now the active home winning streak for the Utah Utes, Joe, stands at 15 consecutive games as they handle Florida 24-11, covering as a 4.5-point favorite. And Lisi, that's one of the points right there. The fact the point spread was only 4.5 in favor of the Utes at its peak. It was 9 in favor of Utah when we thought the returning quarterback Cam Rising might be healthy enough to see action for Utah's opener after injuring his ACL in the Rose Bowl game against Penn State last January. He was ruled out, Lisi, a day before kickoff yesterday on a Thursday. The line got all the way down to 4.5 in favor of Utah only. And then Bryson Barnes stepped in, played well. The young quarterback Nate Johnson showing that athletic ability on the ground, finding the end zone as well. And Utah manhandles Florida up front, Joe. They only allow the Gators to rush for 13 yards in total as a team. And again, a 13-point win for the Utes.
Yeah, think about how dominant that was. Last year, they gave up 283 rushing yards on the ground. Anthony Richardson solely abused them for 168 of those yards, and I think that was the difference in terms of this ball game in Rice Eccles last night. You know, Graham Mertz is a good quarterback. He's not as athletic as Anthony Richardson was, and that was the difference. They jumped up early. When you start the game with a 70-yard bomb, now the fan base is involved. The stadium's rocking. Put all the pressure on Florida. They couldn't convert. They had a critical fourth down and one, Ben. Remember, inside the 20, false start. They opted for the field goal. And at the end of the day, the kid misses it. It changes the whole momentum in terms of the second quarter of that ball game. The spread actually got as low as 3.5 on Wednesday night once it became solidified that Cam Rising was out. So think about that. Almost a full touchdown and movement from 9.5 down to 3.5. And then it settled in at 4.5 right before kick. So at the end of the day, it was a dominant effort. I think Utah, one of the best teams in the Pac-12, and the biggest Achilles heel for them has been starting slow. So this is a great start, not just for out-of-conference play, but momentum throughout the Pac-12 season potentially.
A great point, Lisa Guy, because the Utes have won the Pac-12 two consecutive years. But, of course, the Pac-12, which we'll talk about, really is no longer, has not made the college football playoff since the 2016 college football season. That's where Utah wants to get to, not just a conference title, but being a part of the CFP. If you lose in the non-conference, it makes your margin of error in a conference slate so much more difficult. Utah had that unfortunate thing happen last year on the road in the Swamp, not here in 2023, and they do so without Cam Rising. On the other side, Joe, a dismal start to year number two under Billy Napier. 9 penalties, including one where on special teams they had two guys on the field wearing the same number 3 jersey, a penalty which gave on fourth down Utah a new set of downs, and 4 plays later, Nate Johnson, finding the end zone. So many issues for this Gators team, Joe. Only 13 yards on the ground. Graham Mertz wasn't terrible, threw for 333 yards, his career high in college football. But Joe, Florida has a gauntlet of a schedule this year, including the opener in Salt Lake. If last night was a glimpse of what is to come, it could be a very long year number two for Billy Napier in Gainesville.
Yeah, Ken, and that front 7 wore down in the fourth quarter, right? They couldn't stop the run. Last year, they gave up 189 yards on the ground. Utah established the line of scrimmage early, didn't get much pressure on Bryson Barnes and Nate Johnson in that ballgame. So if Florida's going to get over the 5.5 win total, two things need to happen. They need to be more explosive offensively, and secondly, they need to be more physical in terms of the front 7, Ben.
Absolutely. So 13 rushing yards, Joe. That's it? For a Florida team that wasn't half bad on the ground last year. A lot of that, though, because of the dynamic nature of how Anthony Richardson plays the quarterback position. We'll also look at the Big Ten opener last night in Minneapolis, because what a game it was between Nebraska and Minnesota. We'll talk about that next. A review of Thursday before we preview Friday here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. He's Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Let's keep it rolling, Lisi guy. Thursday kicked off week number 1 of the college football season. We had 11 FBS games yesterday evening, including a Big Ten opener in Minneapolis at the bank between the Golden Gophers of Minnesota and the Cornhuskers of Nebraska. The opening game, Joe, as well, not just for 2023, but Matt Rhule's tenure as the head Husker of this Nebraska football program. And although Matt Rhule is his own individual, this team is entirely different from the years past under Scott Frost. A similar theme continues, Joe, for Nebraska. The Huskers now 2-14 in the last 3 years in single score football games, as Minnesota storms all the way back in the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter to win 13-10 in a Big Ten West barn burner last night in the Twin Cities.
Unreal, Ben. I mean, I really enjoyed that game last night. As low scoring as it had everything, right? Turnovers, flip in terms of a momentum in the last 5 minutes, you know, the ability to have Nebraska on the fringe of victory and not being able to close the door. That was the whole MO under Scott Frost, like you mentioned, right? I thought they were much more physical in terms of the offense and defensive line play. I thought the secondary played lights out, especially in critical third down type of situations. They were a much more disciplined type of football team last night under Matt Rhule. The problem was turnovers, right? Turnovers critical in the red zone, turnovers in the end of the game when the game was tied. That's what allowed Minnesota to pull that ball game out. Great plays too. The kid makes an unbelievable catch in the corner of the end zone with a toe tap.
Yeah.
On a third down play, you stop Minnesota there, you're off the field and potentially you get the ball back. Lights out, game over. So, again, I think Nebraska will be much better this year. I think they get over the win total, but this game hurts because it was a conference game within the Big Ten West last night.
No doubt, Lisi. Both you and I were optimistic about the Huskers and their over of the 6.5 win total with some plus money. Nebraska hasn't had a winning season since 2016. It's been a very long time in Lincoln for one of the storied football programs in the history of college football. They could still get 2-6 wins, obviously, Lisi. They can still go over 6.5, but this felt like a winnable game. They did cover as a 7-point underdog. That does need to be said. But in that idea, Lisi guy, an opportunity last night where they squandered a golden chance against the Gophers. And kudos to Minnesota and PJ Fleck scoring twice in the final 3.5 minutes of the game to rally for that victory. Dragan Kesich, the 47-yard field goal off his left leg right down the pipes. Literally never a doubt, Lisi guy. He barely missed from 54 earlier in the game. The kid has a great leg for Minnesota, and what a valuable resource that is in Big Ten West football. But Lisi, 4 turnovers overall for Nebraska in its 2023 debut. 3 interceptions thrown by Jeff Sims, and at very, very, very critical moments. We'll focus on the final 5 minutes of the game. Nebraska driving in Minnesota territory, and Anthony Grant, the running back, fumbles. It allows Minnesota to come down the field, score that touchdown to tie the game at 10 apiece. It was that 4th-and-10 play, Lisi, that you mentioned. Daniel Jackson, the 13-yard touchdown toss from Ethan Kaliak-Manis, the toe drag swag for Minnesota's leading receiver from a year ago. And then Nebraska had an opportunity, Joe, driving with just over a minute left, again, into Gopher territory before Jeff Sims throws his 3rd pick of the night. The 2nd taken by the way, by Tyler Newbin for the Gophers, one of the best defensive backs, not only just in the Big Ten, but all of college football, Lisi, a preseason Big Ten first-team selection or all preseason team, however you want to think about that, and he put that on display with 2 picks last night. And, Lisi, that will be the crux for the Cornhuskers. Yes, it's been the long story of Nebraska unable to close out football games or squandering opportunities late in the 3rd and in the 4th quarters. 18 losses now since the start of the 2021 college football season, 15 by single digits, a total margin in that time, Joe, of 79 combined points. But Matt Rhule had this to say afterward: I'm not Scott Frost. I've been here for 1 game. This is not our 14th loss by a single score in the last 3 years. This is my first. We will rectify the issue. And what he pretty much said, Joe, was it's really clear to see what the glaring issue was tonight. Not that we had false starts or penalties or whatever it might have been. It was we turned the ball over 4 times. You can't do that in conference play.
No, you can't. Again, especially on the road, right? The one thing that you want to do on the road is be clean with the football, win the turnover battle if possible, and definitely win the special teams battle. And they did that for much of the first half, even in heading into the 4th quarter. It was, you know, I blame a little the coaching staff because they were pounding the rock with Jeff Sims in the RPO game. Once you flip the field in terms of the 50s, at the end of the day, it's, all right, safe throws, nothing over the middle of the field, outs, and let's try and run it to get into a long field goal. And just if we don't make it, then we leave no time for Minnesota to come back. That wasn't the case. They called a pass play where he threw it over the middle of the field and the kid picked it off. So that's where the 50-50 blame goes. But again, I think Matt Rhule's too good of a coach to allow this team to slip or lose intensity and focus. They're just going to get better and more disciplined as the year goes on. And hopefully Jeff Sims cleans that up in terms of his play this season.
I would agree, Joe. I do agree with you. I do not think, and maybe this is just blind optimism once again, because the sample size is large, 15 losses by a single digit in the last 3 years, but I do believe this will be turned around for Jeff Sims and Nebraska. Again, credit to the Golden Gophers. Lisi, a defense that is led by that secondary, and Tyler Newbin showed that last night. Also, Ethan Kaliak-Manis, who filled in a ton last year for the injured Tanner Morgan, reinventing this offense. Minnesota, Joe, threw the football 44 times last night. The Golden Gophers in the last 2 college football seasons, 2021 and 2022, outside the service academies, the only other program in the country to run the football on 65 or more percent of their plays. That is how run dependent the Gophers were. Last night, they aired it out 44 times, Lisi guy. A change in Minneapolis.
Yeah, well, think about this. You know, when 2019, when they beat Auburn in the bowl game, they had Tyler Johnson, they had Rashad Bateman, and Tanner Morgan in his freshman season threw 30 touchdowns. So P.J. Fleck can open up this offense. And as long as the offensive line protects him, because he got knocked around a ton in the second half, Nebraska got pressure. But even though they threw it 44 times, if the offensive line can hold up, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with in the Big Ten West. Defensively, they are legit. One of the top third down defenses all last year in college football. So keep an eye out for this team. I like what they showed, especially in crunch time. And I love P.J. Fleck as a coach, Ben. He coaches up talent. He doesn't have five stars. He's got 3 and 4 stars, and he coaches them up.
Yeah, absolutely so. Minnesota, who was in contention for a Big Ten West crown last year, their win total 7.5. Lisi, there was some thought there would be regression on the defensive side or the football, of some concerns offensively because Muhammad Ibrahim and Trey Potts were no longer there. A good start for Minnesota, having the stones to come back and win that football game, and Minnesota off to a perfect 1-0 start. Lisi, elsewhere, UConn keeps it competitive against NC State. The Pack does win 24-14. But UConn does cover as a 14.5 point dog, and UCF, Joe, puts a licking on Kent State, 56-6, more than 730 yards of total offense for the Knights.
I took John Rhys Plumlee 100-1 to win the Heisman after that performance last night.
That's a little interesting. I took John Rhys Plumlee over 54.5 rushing yards, as I highlighted here yesterday on Football Full Circle. He finished with 90 on the ground and a score. You ready to talk some Friday college football? We'll do that next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're back live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. Lisi, I can't believe I'm going to say these words, but I feel as though we need to touch on it before we move on to the Friday night slate. Conference realignment has officially happened once again. What was thought of almost as a joke and then became a little bit real and then had more pressure on it and then was dead and then got brought back to life last week. The ACC has officially invited Cal, Stanford, and SMU to join the conference starting in 2024. That means 17 member institutions that play football, 18 that will play every other sport, including Notre Dame, because, of course, the Irish Independent at FBS football. Lisi, it's one of the more ridiculous moves we've seen in conference realignment, full with a ton of ridiculous moves, but it just is crazy that you're going to have teams from Northern California playing teams from the Eastern Seaboard and North Carolina and South Carolina, but it's the entire thing. TV money rules the day. Cal and Stanford won't be full shares until the 10th year they're in the ACC. ESPN is going to give the conference as a whole about $60 to $70 million more per year, but now that's divided by 17 or 18 teams. SMU, Joe, doing the conference a favor and not taking any TV revenue for the first 9 years because the boosters in Dallas, I guess, can support that and sustain somewhat of an economic model. Lisi, what's your reaction to the ACC adding Cal, Stanford, and SMU?
It's like the land of misfit toys. I feel like that's all right, those are three teams that we could just take on. All right, let's take them. I mean, why not take Washington State and Oregon State? I just don't understand, Ben. I know why they did it. Notre Dame was a big pusher and backer for this type of move, even though they're not really technically in the conference. They're aligned with the conference. And that was the rumor, right, that Notre Dame was pushing for this to happen. Happen. Again, yep. Is it going to make the ACC better? Not in my perspective. You know, nobody's knocking down the door to watch Stanford and Duke play, an ACC game overnight at 10:30 on a Saturday night. I mean, it's a good matchup. It's not an elite matchup. It doesn't really put the ACC over the top, and it doesn't certainly, in my opinion, put the ACC ahead of the Big 12 in terms of the transitions and moves they have done up into the this point. So it is what it is. And I'll guarantee this, they're not going to take money for like 9 or 10 years, right? How many more conference realignments are we going to have by the time that situation takes place?
What a great point. Maybe the ACC as a whole is dissolved, or ESPN backs out of the deal with the ACC, but the grant of rights is really the reason that the Atlantic Coast or the All Coast Conference is what it is right now. Their TV deal with ESPN and Disney running through the 2035-36 college athletics season. And Lisi, there was 12 of 15 member institutions currently that voted yes for these three new schools, Cal, Stanford, and SMU, to join. The three that did not: Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina. UNC pretty much sent out a large dissenting opinion yesterday night as these games were playing on Thursday, saying how ridiculous it is because the marginal money they are all going to make a couple of ticks up a year, and we're talking millions of dollars, but in the scale of the billion-dollar industry that is college football and college sports, nothing that really is going to move the needle. Certainly not enough to keep Clemson and Florida State, mainly FSU, happy, Joe, and compete on the level of an SEC team. So to sacrifice all of that to get a couple more million dollars a year, which, again, is probably not going to be all that significant for your athletic department, or more specifically the football program, to have to play all of these wildly athletically scheduled things to send Stanford to North Carolina and back and forth. They've listed Dallas, SMU as the hub for what is going to be Olympic sport, non-revenue sports playing. So goodbye home games or home field or court advantage for those non-revenue sports. It's just ridiculous, Joe. We're getting to a point which we've all known. The allure of amateurism is done. FBS football is trying to become a semi-professional league, and that's where we stand. It's the sad reality of college football that I think we can all at least acknowledge, even if we do not prefer it. FBS football, Joe, needs to separate from the rest of college sports because this is getting just ridiculous at this point. It's been ridiculous for the last 2-3 summers.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's absolutely, it's stupid at this point. It really is. And it doesn't affect the play this year. It's just, you know who it affects? You mentioned it doesn't really affect the athletic programs. It affects the suits, right? The people that put this deal together to show, look what I did. I'll take a bonus. I'll take an extra $250,000, tacked onto my salary. That's all that matters, Ben. These moves are being made not with the best interest in terms of the student athletes or the best interest of the programs involved in the conference. This comes down to money. Everybody's greedy and they want a piece of the pie. They know that by attaching themselves to these three teams, they get more money, and that at the end of the day, that's all they care about.
Yeah. Lisi, it's perfectly represented, in my opinion, by Stanford. Stanford is one of the best athletic departments in men's and women's sports that you'll find around the country. The Capital One Cup is given up at the end of every year to the best men's and women's athletic departments in college sports. The Stanford women have won 8 of the available 12, I'm pretty sure. The Stanford men have won the most, 4 of the available 12 on the men's side. They are the only athletic department in all of Division I college sports to have both their men's and women's athletic department win the Capital One Cup in the same year, and they've done that twice, in 2017 to 2018 and in 2020 to 2021. I mean, it's ridiculous how good Stanford is in all those non-revenue sports that are now being a sacrificial lamb for football to make some money. And don't get me wrong, Stanford is a proud and prestigious football program as well, Joe. In the last 15 years, Stanford is one of 20 to 25 schools in the country at the FBS level that has won more than 121 games. Stanford has shown they can compete at the highest level of the sport, Joe, despite the drop-off, obviously, in the final few years of David Shaw and what we expect to be a really difficult year to start things out this year for Troy Taylor, that's his name, right? The head coach of Stanford. And so that's going to be a difficult thing. The Cardinal, a win total of 3.5. The under has the juice. And Stanford in action on this Friday night. But, Joe, just to me, Stanford, like many athletic departments and programs that we have seen be affected by conference realignment, in my opinion, it's the perfect representation. And I don't think the ACC, because Stanford's not making a full revenue share, at least for the first 7 to 8 or maybe even decade they are in the conference, I don't think the revenue they get bumped up by in football really helps out any anything in terms of the overall travel accommodations and the logistical nightmare that is going to be scheduling these non-revenue sports. Again, it's just sad in college athletics, but you almost kind of face the reality, Joe. This is going to be the case. This is not the last round of realignment we are going to see. It is not the last large shockwave to the sport that we love in college football or the ramifications it has in college athletics. It's just kind of the sad reality, Lisa Guy.
It is. And you know, thinking about what you said in regards to the rest of the programs as it relates to Stanford, if I'm not mistaken, during the COVID year, they were one of the universities and organizations that cut like 8 to 10, if I'm not mistaken, athletic programs, or cut their budgets to the point where they couldn't move forward. So if that was the case two or three years ago, right? And now you're getting a little money trickling in, but the money's not going to cover the cost, right, of the other programs due to travel now across from the West Coast to the East Coast. Now you're putting out, so what are you doing? From a budget perspective, you're not even benefiting the program or the university. So now what are they doing? So it makes absolutely no sense in regards. It's not fiscally responsible. It's not responsible for the student athletes. They're only doing it for greed because they want the people that are making the deals are benefiting earlier rather than later, Ben. They're the only ones benefiting right now.
For sure. It's about money. It's about staying afloat in a highly competitive landscape that is college sports and TV revenue. And that is driven by college football. It is the only real main economic driving force. College basketball, both men's and women's, college baseball, some of the other big sports, yeah, they're going to give you some pretty good money. But when it comes to being a full-fledged athletic department at the FBS level, when you sponsor FBS football, that is what the main driving economic force is. Anyway, Lisa Guy, that's why I love the fact that we have games once again, because on nights like last night, you don't give a damn about conference realignment. You're not even really thinking about the Big Ten changing as you're watching Big Ten West football between Minnesota and Nebraska. So let's focus on the games. Six FBS games on this Friday, Lisi, before the first full Saturday slate of the college football season on the horizon tomorrow. Lisi, let's start with an ACC opener between Louisville and Georgia Tech. Two new head coaches officially for both the Cards and the Yellow Jackets. Brent Key, who was the interim head coach last year for Georgia Tech after Jeff Collins was fired after the opening month, actually went 4-4, Joe, at his alma mater with two huge road upsets on the road against ranked Pittsburgh, on the road against ranked North Carolina later in the year. The Yellow Jackets, a 7.5-point dog against Louisville, Joe, who Jeff Braum returns to his alma mater now at the helm after nearly a half decade in West Lafayette as the head coach for Purdue football. A 7.5-point number, Lisi Guy. Where do you stand on this ACC opener between Louisville and Georgia Tech?
I lean to Haynes King, the Texas A&M transfer, and Georgia Tech in this ballgame. They were much more physical in this matchup. It comes down to the quarterbacks. I think I like King over Plummer. And it's a transition from Satterfield to Brahms' offense. Give me Georgia Tech to keep it close.
Jack Plummer's passing yards prop is 255 and a hook. Haynes King is under 200. It's not the triple option, though, anymore at Georgia Tech. I think, Joe, what we've seen out of the Yellow Jackets continues in the first full year under Brent Key. Give me the dog as well. More FFC next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The football full circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're back here on FFC. It is football full circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. All right, Joe, quickly, a few more games on this Friday. Then we'll go to the entirety of a full Saturday slate before the game of the week on Sunday. Tonight, Joe, an in-state battle between Central Michigan and Michigan State. The Spartans, a 13.5-point favorite against the Chippewas, the over-under 44.5. Joe, can MSU cover this nearly two-touchdown spread to start things off in 2023?
Oh, they can. I don't think they do, though. I lean to Central Michigan in terms of this ballgame. What does the offense look like with Keon Coleman and Peyton Thorne out of that lineup now? Both players were starters last year. Again, it comes down to Jim McElwain and their ability to run the football. They were a little inconsistent last year. Central Michigan, 4-8. They do have six starters coming back on defense. Again, I could see Michigan State winning, Ben, but I still think Central Michigan is live within the 14.5 point number later tonight.
Yeah, I don't love the line, if I'm being honest, at this moment. But what I will be keeping an eye on, Joe, and I may have to tell you to bet for me out there in New Jersey, if they post a rushing yards prop on Nate Carter, Nathan Carter, as he is known, out of UConn, the transfer who now plays in East Lansing, an incredibly talented running back against CMU tonight, who gave up nearly 165 rushing yards last year. In MAC football, they allowed more than 220 in their final three games of the year. Nathan Carter, Joe, only four games last year for the Huskies. In his first two, over 120 rushing yards before he was injured in that fourth game, coincidentally enough, against Michigan. I think he goes off tonight. I think he's going to rush for a ton of yards. I would be interested to see what the prop is, knowing it might be a split backfield, at least to start, with Jalen Berger, who was there last year in East Lansing for Michigan State. But I think I'm going to fall in love with this Nate Carter guy this year, Lisi. Not Kenneth Walker III quite, but a transfer running back for the Spartans, who I think is going to make some headwaves in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, and Mel Tucker and Michigan State want to pound the rock, right? When you have uncertainty with your quarterback or a new potential starter, that's what you have to do. You have to rely on the physicality of the rushing attack. And UConn was a successful rushing team last year, right? They struggled passing the football. So we'll see if Nate Carter does post a prop a little bit later. I'll put it down for you.
I appreciate that. We'll keep an eye on it, Lisi guy. Maybe your money or my we'll do my money. That's fine. Okay. All right. So now as we roll on, Lisi guy, that's an in-state showdown in the Michigan or in Michigan between Michigan State and Central Michigan. But there's not an in-state showdown, but it features two teams with the same name, the Battle of the Real Miami. Miami of Ohio, Miami of Florida. Of course, it's the Hurricanes and the Red Hawks tonight, Lisi, to start the year. The Hurricanes in their second year under Mario Big Chess Cristobal, a 16.5 point favorite with only a total of 44.5 tonight, Joe, against Miami of Ohio. This is a game that many on social media have been highlighting as the Battle of the Real Miami. Brett Gabbert, the quarterback of the Red Hawks, was asked last week who he thinks the real Miami is. Of course, he said, well, I think it's here in Oxford, Ohio, and we'll show them on that opening Friday night of week number one. Lisi, how competitive do you expect this game to be tonight?
I actually expect it to be close. I really do. And Carver killed me the other night. I just said, listen, here's the situation. Tyler Van Dyke is potentially 50-50 in this ballgame. Miami last year in their seven losses, they struggled rushing the football. 98.3 yards per game in those seven losses. I think Miami O is an offense that's balanced, but they'll run. They're not going to have a lot of chunk plays. That means shortening of the game, time of possession. I think Miami clearly is in control from start to finish, but I see this matchup like 24-10, 24-13, something ugly like we saw with Utah last night.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a game that might stay under that number. Again, it's 16.5 point spread. Virtually, you got to win by 17. What is that in football? That's three scores at bare minimum. If you're expected to win by 17 points, Joe, if you're a three-score favorite in a football game and the total's only 45.5, that means a lot of the offense is expected from the Hurricanes this evening. Not so much from the Red Hawks, unless Brett Gabbert, the quarterback who talked, can back up his talk with his play this evening. I'm staying away from this game. I'm just going to be excited for the memes and all the reaction on social media. Joe, we mentioned Stanford, now only a three-point favorite tonight, late night in Honolulu against the Rainbow Warriors. Hawaii was great last week in Vandy, keeping that game competitive, had an opportunity to tie it late in the fourth quarter on a drive. Timmy Chang had his team out there ready to go. Lisi, I think this spread before that game last week in Nashville was closer to a touchdown. Now it's on a firm three, that field goal number in favor of the Cardinal. You think Hawaii can cover this number again, or maybe even pull off the outright upset?
I do. Now, I'm partial, Ben, because it was over a touchdown. I have a 9.5-point number with Hawaii.
Holy shnikes.
It fluctuated. Yeah, it fluctuated 6.5 points. So, you know, part of that was due to the performance last week as a 17.5-point road dog against Vanderbilt, the team they lost to 63-10 the year before. So, again, they stepped up traveling to Nashville last week. They come back home. Troy Taylor and Stanford, their first game, new offensive system. They're going to spread it wide where they were more balanced running the football last year. So that is the concern, I think, for the Stanford Cardinal. But now, down here, basically, if you're taking Hawaii, they got to win the ball game, right? That's the biggest thing. Yeah. I will say having a game under your belt is definitely a benefit. I'm going to still stick to Hawaii tentatively. Again, I just hope they cover the 9.5. I'm going to lean to Hawaii in this ball game.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen dramatic line movement, Joe. A touchdown virtually now. I can't believe you have a 9.5. That is pretty good handicapping on your part to get that out early and often. All right, Lisa Guy, let's keep it rolling into the Saturday slate. Again, there's not that marquee rank versus rank matchup to highlight the slate on Saturday. That comes on Sunday. But, Lisa, as we look at things right now, one of the best games on Saturday, in my estimation, is in primetime. The Battle of the Carolinas, North Carolina and South Carolina in Charlotte. Right now, UNC, a 2.5-point favorite for the 60th all-time meeting between these two border schools. Joe, what do you think this version looks like? Will it be as competitive as the 2.5-point spread might say?
Well, a 2.5-point spread, I mean, that's as close as you can get, right? I mean, I like South Carolina. I told you, I think that the South Carolina is the team to beat in this matchup. I think they're more physical. I think they have potentially the better defense in this ballgame. I'm going to take Shane Beamer and South Carolina to strike the upset. Do not like North Carolina's secondary giving up 271 passing yards per game, that ranked .115 in all of FBS. And Spencer Rattler, to me, is the quarterback that I think is much better in this ballgame, Ben.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what version of Spencer Rattler we get tomorrow night against North Carolina. 252.5 is that prop for Rattler. Drake May on the other side, of course, he's probably going to be a top five pick in the 2024 NFL draft this upcoming April. 276.5 for Drake May, who also can use his legs. That rushing yards prop not out just yet. Also keep an eye on DK Joyner, the running back for South Carolina. Guy can ball. Guy is a physical force. Lisa, as we look at some of the early games on a Saturday, Nick Saban and Alabama have won 21 consecutive season openers. Under Saban, Joe, it's 15 straight, maybe even 16 straight season openers at this point. So many, it's hard to keep track. The Crimson Tide also playing under the lights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on a Saturday in Bryant-Denny has a 39.5 point favorite against Middle Tennessee State. And Joe, the news we've been waiting all offseason, all fall camp for long for Alabama: Jalen Milroe has been named the starting quarterback to start week number one against the Blue Raiders. Of course, Jalen Milroe, Joe, filled in for Bryce Young when he was injured against Arkansas and then got the start the next week against Texas A&M. From what you have seen, Joe, out of Milroe in his short career in Tuscaloosa, is he the right guy to lead the Tide into 2023?
Yes, he is. He's battle-tested. He's played in the system, and he's played in SEC games, which is more important when you have that Week 2 ball game with Texas looming. They're already a 6.5-point favorite. I think they're going to run it much more this year with Tommy Reese and Jalen Milroe because of his athleticism. Here's the thing. You mentioned 21 straight. By 27.3 points per game, only one loss since 2016 at home in Bryant-Denny. They abused Utah State last year. You know, they covered a 40.5-point number, 155-0. But do they want to show everything? 39.5. I took them with Middle Tennessee State. I think there's no doubt Bama wins, but I think Middle Tennessee State does cover the 39-point number with Texas looming in week two.
Of course, Joe, as MTSU last year that pulled off the upset of Miami. in non-conference play, that being the Hurricanes. And Rick Stockstill delivered one of the best lines of the entirety of the college football season early on in September. They paid us $1.5 million to come down here. We held them to 1.6 yards per carry, an all-time line, and they got the win. Middle Tennessee State, I mean, listen, it's different going up against Alabama in Bryant-Denny than Miami anywhere, but maybe they keep that game competitive. It's a 40-point spread virtually. One of the marquee games, Joe, that might not be all that competitive tomorrow, of course, is the debut of Prime Time in Boulder, Colorado. It is Deion Sanders leading the Buffs in their first game. It's in Fort Worth tomorrow, but still his first game at the helm of Colorado against the reigning national runner-ups in TCU. Joe, the Horned Frogs are ranked 17th in the country. They have the sixth best price to win their own conference, a conference they played in the championship game of last year. And TCU's really not given much respect, Joe, from that outlook to get back to the college football playoff and the stage they performed on a year ago. TCU, though, a 20.5-point favorite against Colorado, Joe. What do you think this game ends up looking like? What will the result be?
This one's tough. You don't know what you're going to get out of Colorado. I will say I know what I have with Chandler Morris. I know what I have with TCU, with Trey Sanders moving over. They have an explosive offense. I don't think they'll miss that much of a beat. I'm going to lay it with TCU. This is the game that they wore them down at the point of attack last year. So give me TCU laying the 20.5. I do like the over with Chandler Morris and obviously Sadur Sanders for the Colorado Buffaloes. I think there will be points aplenty later tonight.
63.5 is that total. Speaking of points, Iowa's a 23.5-point favorite with a total of 43.5. Virginia's laying 27, or excuse me, Tennessee is laying 27.5 against Virginia with a total of 56.5. No Jim Harbaugh for Michigan in their opener against East Carolina, but the Maize and Blue a 35.5-point favorite. So really hefty spreads on the first full Saturday of the year, Joe. One of the more intriguing games, Washington-Boise State. The Broncos only going to be booked as an underdog for the 19th time in the past decade plus since the 2013 college football season. They're getting 14.5 points on the road in Seattle against UW. Michael Penix Jr., last year's second leading passer in college football, returns. Lisi, how do you see this game?
I lean to Washington. 2 points of discount, 16.5 down to 14.5. It comes down to Taylon Green. Good last year. He needs to be elite to cover this number with Michael Penix. I can only lay it with Washington, Ben.
A dual-threat quarterback, Taylon Green, is. He put that on display in the bowl victory for Boise State last year. Boise State's been a double-digit win football team in 5 of their last 7 seasons. Just something to keep in mind. That game is going to be competitive up in the Pacific Northwest. We'll preview the game of the week. LSU, Florida State, next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Just a few more minutes left here on Football Full Circle. A few more minutes, Joe, for us to dive into the game of week number one in college football. It's Florida State and LSU, the only ranked versus ranked matchup that we have. A top 10 tilt, the 5th ranked Bayou Bengals, the 8th ranked Seminoles facing off in Orlando. Joe, it's a rematch of the season opener from a year ago, also on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend, week number one. And what an incredible game that was. One of the games of the year on the opening weekend of the year. Florida State was up by a touchdown, 24-17. They punt the ball back to LSU under 2.5 minutes remaining. Malik Nabers of the Bayou Bengals muffs the punt. Florida State recovers inside LSU's own 15-yard line. They're driving, icing away the game. Just over a minute left. They decide to run it on the goal line. The ball is fumbled. LSU recovers. Jaden Daniels then has to lead a 99-yard touchdown drive the other way, and he throws a touchdown, Joe, as time expires. 24-23, LSU make the extra point. We're going to overtime, an instant classic, except the extra point was blocked by Florida State. The Noles survive 24-23. Joe, what do the two teams do for an encore to start off 2023?
Well, I told you on TMA, it's going to be a high-scoring affair. Two great quarterbacks, Jordan Travis, Jaden Daniels. But I give the edge and the athleticism to both the offense of the Bayou Bengals and the defense led by Harold Perkins. In my opinion, way too much speed. Like Jordan Travis, don't love him, even though the Noles were 5-1 last year on the road or on a neutral field. In big ball games, they really haven't played a level like LSU, and that's why I lean to the LSU Tigers late. In less than a field goal in this ballgame.
Lizzie, I think the thing that stands out to me the most about this game as compared to a season ago, last year the two teams entered with so many questions. Year number one of Brian Kelly, Mike Norvell had not had a winning season yet at the helm of Florida State. Both teams had a win total of 6.5. Now, Joe, both teams are ranked in the top 10 with a win total of 9.5, and both are expected to be college football playoff teams. That does it for Football Full Circle. The money line is next.